The following is presented by Le Sommet Coors Light, celebrity guests, entertainment, and oh, a bit of sports. Every Wednesday night on RDS.
In South Korea, how are you, Pierre?
What a beautiful morning on the Sea of Japan. Spectacular morning, actually.
Well,
morning,
now,
Mitch.
Yes, along with Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo, Mitch Melnick until 7 o'clock. Now, I have some idea what you're talking about, because after we finished up with Pierre yesterday, he texted me some photos, and yes, it just looked spectacular. And I'm not even talking about the dumplings.
Oh, you saw that. That's what I've been having for breakfast. It's been good.
How much better are the dumplings in South Korea?
They're good. They change every day. I don't know. They don't tell you what's in it. You just eat it.
Uh-oh. You're very adventurous.
Yeah, it's been good. That part of it's been good. Korean barbecue is fantastic. Melanie and I went probably 7 or 8 kilometers from the hotel. We were recommended to go there by somebody who works at our hotel. So we took a cab and went there. And we were in the middle of, you know, a typical housing situation in South Korea. And, you know, it was all locals. There were no tourists there. And it was fantastic. And they couldn't speak much English, and we couldn't speak any Korean. And you ordered from pointing at the menu. And it went well. It was really good. I really enjoyed it. Very, very fun.
Beautiful photos. Thank you to give me, again, some idea.
I'll be giving you updates all the time. I don't know what happened. They didn't send over the weekend, so they sent yesterday.
No, they opened up the I just got to one with Keith Jones. Well, never mind that one. everything else is beautiful.
Me and Melanie were having breakfast, and I was just sitting on the other side, and I was howling.
So with Nylander, and that was the Tampa Bay Lightning got a first-hand look at how hot the Maple Leafs are.
Yeah.
And so now a lot of talk. There was already talk about Ryan McDonagh, perhaps. And now Rick Nash has confirmed that the Leafs are one of the teams that he told the Rangers, it's okay, you can send me back home to Ontario if you want to go there. I mean, if you're the Leafs, is there any hesitation whatsoever to give up on a terrific young talent, whoever it might be, in order to bring in a Nash or a McDonagh?
I think you got to look at, is the window open? And the answer's got to be yes for Toronto. But you have to also identify organizational need. What's the greatest organizational need they have? And it's got to be a stopper on the back end, a big-time legit stopper on the back end. Can McDonagh be that guy? Absolutely. He can be that guy. I don't know whether Toronto's on McDonagh's list or not. He had to provide a list as well, much like Rick Nash did. So I don't know the answer to that. In terms of Rick Nash, I just think there's a comfort level between Mike Babcock and Rick Nash that a lot of people haven't addressed. I can tell you, but going back to 2010 at the Olympics in Vancouver, the entire Olympic landscape changed for Canada, especially Hockey Canada, when Mike Babcock made a decision to put a line together of Mike Richards, Jonathan Toews, and Rick Nash. It completely and utterly changed the Olympics for Canada. They dominated the first shift of a game against Russia in the quarterfinals, and they never looked back. And that line was the impetus to get it done. So Mike Babcock trusted Rick Nash in particular to be on that line. Then you look at, you know, the Olympics in Sochi. A lot of people didn't think in 2014 that Rick Nash should be on the team. Mike Babcock says, I'm not paying attention to those people. I like the guy. I'm putting him on. Rick Nash is on the team, and he's a valuable commodity to the group. So there's a comfort level there for Babcock and Nash. There's no question about that. And I don't know how much Mike will have to say, because Lou Lamoriello runs the team. But I got to think that Mike will have a lot to say.
Pierre, for any team looking to win the Stanley Cup and looking to acquire Rick Nash, and I was thinking earlier today, I remember when the Rangers went to the Cup Final, Rick Nash struggled that year in the playoffs, and I know he was dealing with a concussion, or he had just come off a concussion that regular season. But
that's correct.
I look at the playoff production from Nash, Pierre, and 15 goals in 77 games. He hasn't been a playoff performer. Do you think that would make a team hesitant to pick him up?
See, that's how all the pundits and all the fans look at Rick Nash. And I know that I've been punched in the pants a couple times because I've been a big defender of the guy, because I'm down there at ice level. Everybody equates success to points. And in some cases, that is true. That matters. It does matter. But there are other guys that don't have to get points that can help you win. And while it's fair to say that Nash didn't produce offensively, especially in that run in 2013, I think it was, to the final, I would tell you this, he was a major component in terms of a forecheck player, a guy that forced turnovers, an elite penalty killer, a defensive matchup guy. He did other things to help the Rangers. So those are things that don't get fit into box scores or don't get fit into analytics study or don't get fit into game stories. But he can be an important. That's why he was really important in 2010 for Canada and why he was important in 2014 in Sochi.
Yeah, that was a shutdown line, the guys you mentioned.
Correct. That's what I'm saying. So he can help you win in other ways that, you know, numbers can't equate.
Hey, I'll take Rick now. If I think I'm going on a long playoff run, a guy his size, his strength, and his background, all, you know, depending again on what I have to give up, do you think there's any possibility they could get both guys in the same deal?
That I don't know. I mean,
that's
again,
a blockbuster.
I don't know what the market's going to be. I'm really interested to see what the market's going to be. What's the price point going to be on these players? That's going to be, and who's going to start it? Who's going to get the cash register started? Because nobody really knows right now. For instance, I think you asked me yesterday, Mitch, and if I'm wrong, I apologize, but I think you asked me about Derek Brassard and the three components they're looking for. And I said, I don't see that happening. Now, maybe it does happen. But if that's the price point for Derek Brassard, I don't know what the price point is going to be on some other guys. But, you know, again, we'll see. We'll see what the price point is on players.
As far as price point is concerned, do you think McDonough affects whatever happens with Jack Johnson in Columbus, who has asked to be traded?
No, I don't equate them as being similar. McDonough's what's the best way to – he's younger, first of all, than Jack. He's more of a shutdown guy than Jack. Jack's
he's just more responsible
player. Offensive player than Ryan is. But they're different. They're different values. But the youth, I think, would come on costing or would force somebody to pay a little bit more for McDonough than they would for Johnson.
He's just a better player. He's more responsible.
They're different. They're different. Jack can do things offensively that Ryan can't do, and Ryan does a ton of things defensively that Jack doesn't do.
So the art of negotiation here when you're engaged in some trade talks, can you – if you've got a good enough relationship with another manager, can you get to a point where you just level with them and say, give me your best offer, and he'll relay it to you, and then you can get it done? Or is that unrealistic?
No, it's not unrealistic at all. I mean, sometimes that can happen, especially if guys are friends. I'll give you a case in point. It's probably out of the realm for Montreal right now, but New Jersey and Anaheim have made a lot of deals since Ray Sherrill went into New Jersey and Bob Murray's been running Anaheim. They've made some subtle little deals over time where, you know, maybe they've been below the radar for whatever reason, but there's a comfort level there when they talk on the phone. That's pretty apparent because they've been able to do some deals sometimes in the regular season, sometimes in the off season. So that would be one where maybe you say, interesting. But in the case of the Rangers in particular, Jeff Gorton, even though he's been around the league for a long time, and I think he's a really smart young manager on the way up, he maybe doesn't have the same relationships as some of the more established guys in the league. So maybe he couldn't do something like that. Somebody like Stan Bowman, who's, you know, been in the league a very long time and has been a very successful manager, he's a trusted guy when you're doing deals, he could pick up the phone and do something like that with virtually anybody in the league.
Yeah, but if you're Jeff Gorton, you got Glenn Sather hanging around, you got Doug Risebrough hanging around, right?
No, you do, but those guys, I would be shocked if they were on the phone doing, you know what I'm saying, Mitch? Like, you talk about picking up the phone and talking. You can't have too many voices involved in trade discussions. You just can't, because that's when leaks start to happen and that's when things start to fall apart. And I'm not saying that Glenn or Doug are leaking. I'm not, but once you get a lot of different voices involved in trade talks, it can be problematic.
All right, I want to get to Stan Bowman and the Habs, but actually Gallo's going to get to the Habs first here.
Yeah, actually a couple breaking stories, one outside of the Habs, one with the Habs, one with the Habs on the goaltender front. Charlie Lindgren has signed a three-year contract extension. We don't have the number value for money, but we do know it's a one-way deal.
Oh, so there's your backup for the next 3 years.
He's earned that one. He's good. He's a good goalie, and he will just continue to evolve and get better and better and better all the time.
And the other breaking story from the NHL is that goaltender Brian Elliott is going to be out of the Flyers, is going to be out 5 to 6 weeks. He has a core muscle surgery, and the Flyers now are going to be looking for a goalie at the deadline, maybe one of the two from Detroit.
Well, we'll be it. I don't know. here's the one thing I'd tell you. You know, obviously Mrazek's younger than Jimmy Howard. Jimmy's had a pretty good bounce back year, even though the team in front of him hasn't been consistently good. Mrazek has a chance to steal games. We saw that against Chicago, about a month ago, a little less than a month ago. So there's upside for both guys. And one thing Mrazek does really well that doesn't get nearly enough attention is he's a very good puck handler, very, very good puck handler. And that can make a difference, especially with the way Philadelphia's defense is starting to play. So it'll be interesting to see how that one plays out. But they'll definitely have to do something. Now, the one for Flyer fans, just so you know, they have something coming that's going to be really good. Carter Hart's very, very good. And he's a Philadelphia Flyer prospect. And down the road, they're good. Again, I keep telling you, Boston and Philly, those are the teams really trending up. And part of it's because of how good Carter Hart is.
Well, and the Montreal Canadiens are also suddenly kind of deep in goaltending with Keith Primo's kid having a terrific beanpot tournament.
He was fantastic for Northeastern. I was in touch with Jimmy Madigan, their excellent coach. He's got a Montreal tie, and he was born and raised in Montreal, went to Loyola High School before he moved to Toronto. As a kid, Jimmy's been a dear friend for close to probably 40 years with me. So I'm so proud of Jimmy and what the job he's done at Northeastern. They haven't won the Beanpot in 30 years. We talked before the Beanpot, and I said, I talked to Jimmy's team probably once every other year. And I'm really a big fan of the way he does his business. But Primo was somebody that he's been so excited about for so long. And I've watched Northeastern probably 5 or 6 times this year. He's the real deal. He's good. He's trending the right way. He's probably, for NHL play, probably 3 years away, maybe a little bit more for NHL. But he's close enough to be ready to be a pro player.
Caden Primo, goaltender. All right. In Denver today.
You're out of the playoffs.
Well, we're not saying it. You guys are saying it.
Unless you can win 23.
Unless you can win 23 of your last, 27 games? That's Pat Hickey. Imagine Claude Julien hearing that from the sage, the hockey sage that Pat Hickey can be, stating as a fact, you're out of the playoffs.
Yeah, that wouldn't sit very well. I had that happen once, and we were really in the middle of the race, too, and it wasn't double-digit points like the Canadiens are. And it didn't sit well with me either. You battle. You don't want your guys mailing in knowing that it's over, so you're consistently looking for ways to make sure that everybody understands they're still in the race. So that's tough. It's not easy to do. I understand Pat's point, too, by the way. I totally understand Pat's point.
I think what he was getting at was if we're going to see some younger players start to get more ice time, and Claude Julien did actually allude to that.
Right now, we're still using our personnel the way we feel we should use it to win hockey games. Having said that, I think there's a lot of young players that have, really gotten better over the course of the season that are playing more now, but not because of the situation, but because they deserve it. We understand, we're still going to have to tweak our team here and there, but I think, right now there's a lot of good things that are happening besides the fact that we're not in the playoffs right now, and it's going to be a tough haul. I think there's still a lot of good things happening with this hockey club.
Pierre, Claude Julien is being gentle there, isn't he? Using the word tweak?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's setting it up the right way. There'll have to be more than a subtle tweak. Again, I'm just letting people know in advance, so it's not even next year yet. The problem you have is that other teams are going to continually pass you because they're going to amalgamate younger and better players into their lineup. You won't have the luxury to do that. And that's going to cause problems for your team in terms of how you're going to be able to play, whether it's in the division or in the conference. Because the East is just, it's not a very friendly place right now if you don't have prospects coming. It's just not. It's just going to be too difficult.
When you're dealing with veteran players like Plekanec and Pacioretty, guys who, their names on the trade bait board, various degree of likelihood that they'll be dealt. To what degree, if at all, do you keep them in the loop? Into your discussions, do you owe it to a veteran player to give them some information?
No, you don't owe them anything. You owe them their paycheck, and you owe them the most professional organization you can provide them. But if it comes down to always consistently telling a guy, hey, we're looking to do this, we're looking to do that, every day, the guy's going to be a basket case, and it's going to be paralysis by analysis. He won't be able to play for you, and he's going to hurt his trade value. So, no, you don't do that. I wouldn't do that. Maybe some teams believe in that. I've never seen that be successful in the league, never.
No, unless it's the opposite, right? Unless, and I'm not saying that is with these guys right now, but in a hypothetical situation, a proud veteran who likes where he is, you go to him and say, listen, I know what you're hearing. We're not moving you.
Oh, that's totally different.
Yeah.
That's different. But then if you move him, I'll give you a case in point. You used to have a general manager in Montreal who's no longer there. He was running the Anaheim Mighty Ducks at the time. And quote-unquote, you'd have to go look it up online, we are not moving those two boys. He said that in the media. We are not moving those two boys, talking about Paul Kariya and Timo Solani.
Yeah.
Well, guess what happened?
Yeah. Pierre Gauthier traded both of them, yeah.
Yeah, well, I didn't say the name. I'm just telling you. There was a general manager that worked in Montreal, and then Anaheim, you raised his name. Yeah, he traded both. Yeah.
Okay, last night again.
Face off to the left of Anton Forsberg, won by the Coyotes. Reeder with it. Reeder with Ronaldo and Domi. Now to the left. Pointing shot. Tip. They score! Jacob Chychrun fires one to the slot, and it's redirected home. And I think it's going to go to Max Domi.
Yeah, Max Domi with a goal and an assist. Your boy Clayton Keller had a big night as well. Arizona beat Chicago badly. So before I get to Domi specifically, it looks like this is it. After how many years? Almost 10 years of a playoff run that has resulted in championships that the Chicago Blackhawks aren't going to get in. What do they do next?
I think they'll start to identify, here's our core seven, and then anybody else can be disposable. But one of the things they really need to do there, and it's very important that they do it sooner rather than later, they have to address their organizational need on defense. It's not the same. They missed Nicholas Hjalmarsson. There's no question about that. They traded Nicoletti a couple of years ago just because they had to, because of cap implications. They don't have anybody like that on the left side. They used to have the best left defense in the league with Duncan Keith, Johnny Oduya, and Nicoletti. Two of those three guys are gone. They lost Hjalmarsson. Seabrook's not the same player. Keith has had a terrible year, and Dunk's a really good friend, but he'd be the first person to tell you he's had a bad, bad year. So they need to address their organizational need on defense. That's really critical for them going forward. Then up front, they've got to find a way to get Johnny Toews back to being a great two-way player, but more of an offensive player. Patrick Kane's got to play with line mates more consistently. I think they know that. So I think that's what Stan Bowman will focus in on right now, rebuilding the defense and identifying their core seven players.
All right, and Max Domi, a lot of talk that he might be dealt.
His name's out there, and I can tell you because I've had GMs send me notes about him asking questions.
So is it because you got to move somebody because they're so bad as a team, or is it you look at the goal totals and they've – I mean, he's a baby. He's an NHL baby.
Yeah, no, he's still got, I think, market credibility. I really do, and I say that just because I like the player. And I like the person. Sometimes, and this happened with Sammy Gagne, too, in Edmonton, they get rushed into bad situations, and they never get to the level they should have gotten to. I continually tell you I was guilty of it. I did it with Robert Petrovsky, who never got to the level he should have got to. He was a tremendous, tremendous talent, and that was because of me and the people in our front office. I pushed to rush him in, and everybody agreed, and we did it, and it was wrong, totally and utterly wrong, and I was really wrong on it. So I always think about that. And you know, that happened to Sammy Gagne in Edmonton, and it happens with a lot of players. It's not just him. I mean, I can go down around the league. Montreal did it with
All right, never mind. I want to wrap this up with among the games tonight, Boston is playing host to Calgary, and the Bruins are paying tribute to the team of 78 that, of course, the Canadiens won. All these tributes pouring in, and that was a great Boston team. The Canadiens won the Cup that year, beating that great Boston team. They had, 11-20 goal scorers. But Ryan McDonagh's name also linked to the Bruins. Carlo's name, does that make sense if he would be part of a package like that? Who would you say would be the best fit for Ryan McDonagh if, in fact, the Rangers trade him? In terms of where the team
Minnesota
is?
Wild.
Back home in Minnesota.
I could see Toronto and Minnesota Wild. See, on Boston, Carlo's a right defenseman. McDonagh's a left. I don't see McDonagh taking ice time away from Chara, and so he'd be pigeonholed behind Chara, and he'd be playing ahead of Matty Grizzlick. So there's kind of a dysfunction there, not in a bad way. I mean, it's nobody's fault. That's just how their roster's set up. In Minnesota, he would go right to the top of the food. He would be Suter, and he would do it by committee on the left side there. And I think that would help their team a ton. And they need something. They got to get in the playoffs. They're in a really tight race, obviously. It would really help in Toronto. I think in Toronto would probably be the best fit because it's exactly what Toronto's crying out for.
Yeah, Minnesota right now 1 point ahead of L.A. in the West for that final wild card spot. Where are you headed today, Pierre?
Oh, I've got a bunch of, I'm watching games first, and then I'm working tonight. I'm working Slovenia and USA. Mitch, I got to tell you, yesterday was a magical day at the rink. Melanie went to Seoul, took the bullet train to Seoul, and had a Korean-Canadian tour guide. She was great, took her around, and I was at the rink the whole day. But the morning I spent a ton of time with Igor Larionov. I mean, it was just a fantastic, fantastic morning with Igor talking hockey, NHL, European, KHL, the Olympics. He's just such a gentleman, an awesome, awesome guy, and so knowledgeable. And then later on, I spent a good portion of the day with Ben Smith and Gavin Regan from USA Hockey talking about, you know, how they went about putting their team together. And then I saw Marco Sturm and the Germans. So it was a really neat day at the rink, fact-finding and gathering information and just sharing ideas. It was really cool. It was a great day.
Igor Larionov, one of the smartest men in hockey history.
Oh, my gosh. The professor, that's his nickname. Yeah. He's phenomenal. And he's if anybody's going to the World Cup, which is in St. Petersburg and Moscow and a little bit in Sochi, I think, this summer, Igor's opening up two restaurants in Moscow. He's all pumped up about it. You know, he's in the vineyard business. He owns a winery. And so he goes, oh, Pierre, you must come. I go, why is that? He goes, oh, Mom, all my best wines will be there. Okay, Igor, that would
there,
be good.
Actually, there are more and more, maybe it has to do with the money. I'm sure it does have to do with the money. More and more current and former professional great athletes are getting into the wine business.
Absolutely. You know who's one of the top guys, though? Drew Bledsoe.
Yep.
Drew Bledsoe in the state of Washington is one of the top vintners out there, and he's went out and studied it. He really worked hard. He's a grape farmer. That's what he is, and he loves it. He loves it. I've read a ton of stories about it, so it's kind of cool. By the way, the numbers on Charlie Lindgren, $750,000 per year times three.
That's a good deal.
Oh, my gosh.
That's an excellent deal.
That's a great deal.
All right.
A really good deal.
Thank you for that, Pierre. Enjoy the dumplings, and we'll talk tomorrow.